What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here locked down in Skeleton Studio. That's right. It's me, Cam, on, you found us. We're here in the studio, me and Philly.
That's right, I'm here.
And this has been strange times here where we're at. There's been a lot of lockdown going on around us, not necessarily in the county we live in. So it's been different. I hope everyone listening is healthy and happy and safe. And we will try to get through all this wild stuff going on around the planet now together.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's kind of working together. I noticed the other day when I went to town, even though there was limited people, everybody seemed really courteous and nice. It reminded me a lot of when 9/11 occurred. Remember how nice people were for it seemed like a couple months?
Yes.
It kind of seems that way, right? Like we're all pulling together. Everybody's so scared of COVID-19 that everybody's just seems to be respectful.
Yes.
I hope everybody out there is doing well, washing your hands. I'm sure a lot of people are bored. I know my kids are because not only are they home from school, but they can't really go do anything. You can't go to like a water park. You can't go bowling. You can't go to the movie theater. You can't even go eat. You can pick stuff up. So they're kind of stir crazy. I went and cleaned the pool out a little early for them. The water's freezing cold, but I don't think they care because they're so going bored.
For it. Yeah.
You can only watch so many episodes of whatever they watch on YouTube. I don't even know.
Tiger King.
No, that's on Netflix, although that's amazing. I wouldn't let my kids watch that. Yeah.
That's who I'm going as for Halloween.
Are you Joe Exotic?
I'm going to be Joe Exotic.
Man, that dude's awesome. He's legit.
Something else. That's right. He is something else.
And the memes, the onslaught of memes I've just gotten in the last 2 days, it's awesome. I love that guy.
Before I forget, folks, we had talked about it. I'd also, if you haven't seen it on YouTube, we posted a little video of it the other day that Kyle and I are going to be live streaming on YouTube. And I don't know. I'm going to see if I can also get it to Facebook live at the same time. But we are going to be probably doing that. What are we thinking about now? This Saturday?
Yeah, we'll probably try it out this Saturday for the first time. But we're going to be doing it a bunch over the next couple of weeks because we're all quarantined up. We've got nothing else to do. And we're trying to, you know, master this technology. So
be a lot of practice.
Yeah, some practice. You got to, you know, practice makes perfect.
So join us on there. Make sure you get your questions ready. Get ready to write in. Keep an eye on, I would say, on some form of social media. Keep your eye either on Twitter or Facebook, or we'll put it on all of them, and Instagram of what time we'll be doing it on Saturday.
And so I know we have listeners from all over the globe that listen to us. And so if we're having it at a time that's not convenient for you, you know, don't stay up till 4 a.m. or get up at 4 a.m. to listen to Two Knuckleheads. You can send an email with a question. We can read your question, answer it on video. And when you wake up the next day, you can go watch the video and see your question answered.
This is very true.
Right? Eventually, we're going to have to figure out a time and a place where it's good for everybody on the planet.
Yeah. That'll be tough, but I think we could swing it.
Or we'll do special just European-only shows.
There you go.
I don't know.
There you go.
That'd be fun. We don't really know. We're still kind of brainstorming. But speaking of storms, seems like there's been an avalanche of crazy sightings pouring in. I don't know if it's just people are stuck at home, so they're bored and they're deciding to tell what they experienced, or they could be just sitting in their basement making them up. Or I don't know.
There's less people out right now, so all the humanoids and all the strange creatures are getting to actually mill about in the cities that they normally have to stay
in. But doesn't it seem like the last week we've gotten a flood of crazy sightings?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it has to do with people stuck indoors. They're like, you know what? I think I'll take time to. That was me cracking my knuckles. write the Kim and Kyle a story about what I experienced 10 years ago when I was in the woods.
It's awesome.
I like them. I'm a big fan of all types of cryptid sightings. You want me to start with mine, or you want to go with yours,
dude? Start with yours. Okay. First of all, we picked these without knowing each other was going to pick. We picked these because of the names of what they say they encounter.
Oh, well, that's how I pick pretty much everything in my life, right? Yeah. If it has a cool name, I'm going with it.
That's 70% a win for me right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like if you're picking out, I don't know, two different types of rifle scopes, and one's called, you know,
Standard.
The Hawkeye, you know, XL, and one's called the Destroyer XL. You're like, dude, I'm going with Destroyer. Right? Yeah. It just sounds cooler. That's what I'm going with.
This is true. This is true.
Anyway, so let's get to this. Check this out. A young witness in Limestone, Maine State says they observed, get this, Cam, a tall ape-like creature with a long, thick T-Rex tail. This a devil monkey?
The devil monkey.
Right? It says this person is unidentified. This happened about 10 years ago when I lived in Limestone, a small town in Maine. For reference, I lived in a small apartment complex completely surrounded by forests. It was very quiet, and lots of wildlife roamed the fields and forest surrounding this complex. I was only 8 years old, laying on the top bunk of my bed, just looking out of my window, daydreaming. There was a spider that would build her web right outside of my window. So, I would always watch her build her web at night before I went to sleep. My window overlooked a parking lot that was right next to a field bordering a thick forest. Well,
is there a pig in that field? Because if this gets any closer to Charlotte's web,
right?
I'm going to turn this table over.
One night I was watching Miss Spider build her web, as I always do, when I see a very tall, ape-like thing with a long, thick tail that tapered at the end.
What kind of tail?
Thick. Kind of how you would imagine a T-Rex's tail, except hairy.
Whoa!
If that's a good comparison, I don't know. It was walking across the parking lot. I kept watching as it wandered into the field just before the forest. It then placed itself in between two trees, about arm's length away from each other, and began climbing up by grabbing the two opposite trees with respective hands and feet and slowly shimmying up the tree. As it made it to the top of the trees, it sort of blended in with them and stopped moving. At this point, I couldn't see it anymore. To this day, I'm completely stumped as to what I saw from my apartment window. Now, this happened when I was living in the Malisette region of Maine. If any of you guys are familiar with Malisette mythology, please let me know. Just for reference, I was wide awake. I pinched myself really hard a couple of times just to see if I could snap myself out of it. But I swear to you, it was real. So, I mean, how do you explain that? Please, folks, if you have any kind of similar experience, email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, and I'll be sure to let this person know. But that is insane. How do you even explain seeing that?
I don't. I just turn back over, draw the shade down, and be like, not today.
Yeah.
I'm not letting this in today.
Crazy.
Well, after you've touched on that, I can't help myself. I have to bring this one forward, y'all. Large winged cat-like humanoid encountered in Deluse, California.
This sounds awesome.
Right here, you're going to like this. It says, a couple in Deluse, California encountered an unknown winged humanoid while walking their dogs at night. Apparently this, RP is this person's name. RP writes, my husband and I own two dogs, and we walk them for an hour every evening after work. We live in a rural area, well, they're in Deluse, California, and it can be a bit creepy at night, especially when there's no moon out for some light and it's pitch dark. Now, this happened a few weeks ago, before daylight savings time. My husband and I were on our nightly walk as usual on a particularly dark night. We were on the most rural part of the trail, about 2 miles from any homes, when suddenly we got an unnerving feeling, and just then nature went silent. The frogs completely stopped croaking, and the bug noises just stopped, and it was silent. Now, there's that Oz effect that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's weird. There must be a predator nearby. Seconds after I uttered those words, we heard the sound of huge wings flapping, as if something was about to land. We felt the wind power generated by this massive thing. We heard an enormous sycamore tree branch crack under the weight of this thing landing on it. I can't even describe how powerful the wings were. It was a calm, still night with no wind, and the wings had created enough force to actually make my long hair blow around.
Jeez.
We both felt the presence of something evil and menacing. We started running, and neither of us was brave enough to look back. Where's the dogs, y'all? Just then, we saw it fly away overhead. It wasn't a large bird. Its wings flapped in an unnatural way as it lurched upwards. My husband's a true skeptic, but couldn't rationalize or begin to explain what we had just seen. Now, he even told his coworker and his friends about it, and he has downright refused to walk into that area since then.
I don't blame him.
No, not at all. This is not the first time I've seen something like that in our area. Last summer, I saw a blacker than black shadow figure that looked like a large cat-human hybrid emerge from the creek and climb up the massive tree and disappear. After that, we had really bad things happen in a series of three, but that's a story for another time. But my point is that there is something in that area. Any thoughts on what it could have been? The week it happened, I had been telling my husband about shapeshifters, so I wonder if I attracted something. I have abilities as it is and have been susceptible to experiences like this, but this really freaked us out. RP.
Wow, I wish I had some of those abilities.
I don't, because I don't want to get that rub from something like that. But okay.
A winged cat-like creature?
Well, the cat-like creature they saw out of the bottom. Uh-huh. The other thing was a flying humanoid. But it goes into what I like the most about it is it's like you and I had talked about dog men. And we said, how come there's not panther people, right? Yeah. Maybe there is.
No.
This is not. That's the first one we've heard.
Yeah, I don't believe it's a panther people.
Come on. Dog men, yeah. Panther people, no.
Yeah, I don't know why. For some reason, I can accept dog man. I can't accept panther man.
Folks, anybody out there listening, if you've had a panther person sighting, any sort of feline, cryptid, like, humanoid sighting, please email the show. And make sure that I see it. We'll leave Kyle completely out of this, and I hope some of y'all send some in. Okay, go ahead.
I know there's a guy that's like trying to make himself a lizard. Isn't there a guy that's trying to make himself a cat? You know, like he's got all.
I saw that dude. Yes, where he looks like a tiger.
Tattoos to make him look like a yes. Tiger, and then like he actually is inserting things under the skin to kind of.
Remember, he's got the big whiskers that come out of his cheeks. He's got the cheekbones built to look like a tiger.
He looks like a really good actor from like the play Cats. Like a really jam up costume. Yeah. I didn't know if I imagined that or I saw that. I definitely saw the lizard guy where he cut his tongue. What do you think about those guys that take a scalpel and cut their tongue?
I'm not tough enough for that.
Dude, there's no way I could do that. I bite my tongue like chewing gum and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I'm a weakling. I can't do that.
Just lancing that thing in half?
No. Yeah. We've all bit hunks out of it and bit the edges off, and you grapple long enough, you get hit in the chin with people's knees. And if you're not wearing a mouthpiece and you bite the tip of your tongue off or something like that, okay, it happens. But to cut it, no, that's why I can't look at stuff like that.
But if you saw the guy that transformed himself into a cat or transformed himself into a lizard, and it was late at night and you hadn't gotten much rest and you were binging like a Leprechaun or an X-Files marathon on Sci-Fi Channel, and you went outside to smoke and you saw that walk through the parking lot. I mean, you might be like, dude, I just saw a sleet stack walk through the parking lot.
I will tell you this straight
up. Just got out of that Honda Civic and drove off.
Everything that you said after, if you were outside of your house, you don't have to be tired. You don't have to be any of that. If it was late one night and you didn't know that tiger guy existed.
Yeah.
And you just kind of saw him mess with you, like lean out and look at you or whatnot. You could close enough to or past you. Yeah, you would think 100% that's what you saw.
Yeah, I don't know where the guy lives. Maybe he lives there in that same you know, area. I don't know. It's possible.
We got to find that guy's name. I have to look that up before the end of this show. I'm going to find that fella's name.
Yeah. Well, speaking of dog man, you brought that up. I've got another sighting. This one took place in our friends in the Great North up in Manitoba. This person says, I saw something that put a big scare into me. I'm going to describe it. Not sure if you'll believe it, but I'm certain about what I saw that day. This happened back in August 2009 as I was driving to my husband's place of employment. Now, we live in Gillam, Manitoba, and he's an electrician from one of the generating stations on the river. It was close to 3 p.m. I had just turned off one of the residential roads near my home, heading east on PR 280. About a half mile after my turn, I caught a glimpse of something tall moving through the trees to my right. Then suddenly it jumped onto the shoulder of the road and stood there as I drove by. I looked in the mirror and I saw it quickly cross to the other side of the road. I picked up speed and didn't stop until I reached the station. I had chills all over. I got a decent look at it. It had a large wolf-like head, but it was standing upright on legs which looked manlike. I didn't see arms as I passed by, but I did see arms swaying back and forth when I looked in the mirror as it crossed the road. The coloring of the head and body hair was charcoal with darker patches. If it was an actual gray wolf, then it was the largest one I had ever seen or even heard of. I thought that someone was playing a trick, but that wouldn't make sense since I think it was during hunting season. I told my husband, who later checked the area where I saw it. He said that there were reports of very large wolf along the river a year or two before that, but he had not heard anything beyond that. I still don't really know if my husband believes me. I also said something to my uncle, who was Chippewa. My uncle told me that it was not a wolf and that I must forget about it. He then recited some words under his breath and told me not to mention it again. That kind of freaked me out. Since it was 5 years ago, I haven't thought much of it until I read a newspaper article about the Dog Man and sightings people have had in other locations. That's how I went to start searching online and found out other sightings like mine. Thanks, SB. Now, there's two scenarios here, I will say.
Thanks, SB.
First of all, either she really did see a dog man, mm-hmm. an upright canine, and her uncle, she mentioned, who was Chippewa. She did mention that he was her uncle through marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy was actually saying, I don't know, some prayers in Chippewa to help her or relieve her, because it's like he didn't want her to even think about it anymore. Like, that might bring something bad. Like, maybe skinwalkers were attracted to people who were thinking about it. I don't know. Either that or under his breath, he was like, this chick here is crazy. She's losing my, because she said he was talking yeah. under his breath.
Yeah, or maybe that's a prayer he's praying as not to get it off on him.
Yeah, please, the love of God, none of her.
Do just not let her bring it to my house.
Yeah, I mean, something like that. I don't know.
Right.
But, I mean, look, in all serious, folks, we've received lots of sightings of people that have seen this thing that they call the dog man. And some of them say it doesn't even look like a werewolf. They talk about it. It looks like a wolf walking around on two legs. And remember, we've even spoken to Linda Godfrey. There's been lots of sightings where it doesn't appear to look like a werewolf like you would think. It just looks like a large wolf walking around on two legs. Is it possible that for whatever reason, science is just not aware of, that wolves from time to time will stand up on their back legs like bear to try to see up over something? I don't know. I've seen cats do it, and I've seen bears do it. We don't think that wolves do it, but do some of them do it? You know what I mean? Like stand and they can walk on their hind legs. I mean, you can train a bear to ride a bicycle. A wolf can learn to walk on its back legs.
Yeah, but the problem is anatomically, the bear is built, its hips and knees function the same way ours do.
I understand.
You know, but with
I'm just trying to rationalize something because I don't want to believe that there's people
7 foot tall wolves
turning werewolves. Yeah, no, I don't like the idea of that.
I guess, you know, I'm sure there are, because there's always some outlier, because we have enough stuff out there, animals and whatever. There's always an outlier of something like that, like such. But
well, you've been to like a dog show or like a rodeo or a fair. You've seen dogs that'll do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but it doesn't look natural. And some of these people, they report like it's walking, like it's naturally. And what I mean by natural is like a dog, lots of times will have to stand almost perfectly up and down,
mm-hmm.
perfectly vertical to keep their balance right. And they kind of hop. They don't walk and take steps because they don't have the ability, the head, the everything, the ability, the way it's connected to have its balance like a primate does. So that's what makes it feel even more so, is it's almost as something changed into it that might have been a primate before that knows how to balance with this new body.
Yeah, maybe.
I have one thing before we take a break that I have to tell you all about.
Okay.
This is a possible Puckwudgie confronted in the woods of Maine. Lon posted this up. It says, "Hello, Lon. I read a post on Facebook, and you were asking about stories of humanoids. Well, I've got one for you. A very true one at that. I was living in Fairfield, Maine on Cottage Street. Up the street from mine were some woods, and I would take my dog Morbid up there to burn off some of that ACD energy. So it says, of her favorite times to go in the woods was when she had when it had just gotten a good snowstorm. Well, one time after a storm, Morbid came and woke me up. She always did this after a storm, except this time it was around 2 or 3 in the morning. So I got up and got dressed to take her into the woods. My daughter had a friend staying with us, and she happened to be up and came along with us. We got up there, and which is crazy to me, to walk around in a snowstorm at 3 in the morning, just take your dog running. That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
It says that we got up there and we're walking on the trail to get to the tree line. And as we're walking towards the trees on both sides of this small trail is a swamp. And I saw some moose prints that were really fresh. So I asked Victoria to hold my dog's leash because I wanted to check out the prints. Well, I took 3 steps onto the swamp ice and fell through to waist deep. Now, Vic was laughing hysterically as I was struggling to get out of the muck at the bottom of the swamp water. Anyways, I finally got myself out of it and continued to the tree line. Now, once you get into the woods, there's a little side trail. I happened to see a gnarly looking tree down this little side trail that really looked awesome with all the snow on it. So I told Vic to stay there and I'd be right back. Well, I took my dog Morbid with me. And as we approached this gnarly tree, my dog dead dodged me, and I hated that. So I turned to scold her when I saw what she was staring at this birch tree. Suddenly, this thing stepped out from behind the tree, and it looked towards us, and I could feel it was just as surprised to see us as we were to see it. Now, it was completely black. It had an oversized head, a swollen belly, but it had no fingers or eyes. It was way too wide to fit behind the skinny little birch tree, but it did. It was like it was communicating telepathically. Like when it turned towards us, it had no eyes, yet I knew that it was just as surprised as Morbid and I were. It was also like it was two-dimensional or something, because it looked like a cardboard cutout or something. After it disappeared behind that tree, suddenly the wind started to pick up, and a little snow-nado began to chase us back to the main trail. It stopped the second both of us had all of our feet on the main trail. I tested this 2 more times, and each time, I was chased back by a snow-nado. I immediately went home and drew what I saw that stepped out from behind the tree, as well as took pictures of the tree it stepped out from. Goes on here, and there's pictures of it and all this online site, and he goes on that later the witness writes, "I'm still freaked out by it. Still not sure what the hell my dog and I saw that night, but it still haunts me to this day. Some folks suggested it was a Pukwudgie, a hide-behind, or worse, an alien. Some said Pukwudgie because I was led away from my friend Victoria twice. One to walk on the swamp ice to check out those moose prints, and then led away again to go take a pic of that gnarled tree. And because it seemed to use the weather as a weapon, like chasing us off the side trail with snow-nados several times, only to stop when we were on the main trail. I've had paranormal experiences since I was a child, and I still don't know what I saw that night. Unfortunately, Victoria moved back to Oklahoma, and my dog, Morbid, died a day after her 7th birthday from cancer. So not too long after that experience, actually."
Wow.
And that's written by C.C. Sinzedian.
A Pukwudgie. Man, I've loved the story of the tricksters in the forest.
The fae.
The fae folk, whatever these Pukwudgies are. I like the I like those sightings. And once again, they talked about how this thing, this Pukwudgie, this fairy, whatever it was, it noticed them noticing it. They always act like they're surprised, like, oh, crap. You're not supposed to be able to see me.
They saw me.
I like that part of the story. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I like that. Well, let's get into the main segment, folks. And on today's show, I'm going to be talking about the Knowles family UFO incident, as well as some other strange sightings in Australia. Let's get into that. When we think of UFOs, or aliens from another galaxy, you don't often think about Australia as being a hotbed for sightings, unless of course you're Australian. But you would be surprised at the number of strange sightings of glowing orbs, cigar-shaped craft, and other otherworldly objects that have been seen in Australia. As depicted in the art and petroglyphs of the Aboriginal people, UFO and alien sightings go back to ancient times. Although there have been UFO sightings all over Australia, some of the most frequent sightings have been in New South Wales, near Katoomba, up in the Blue Mountains. Following global patterns, sightings are more common in specific grid points or ley lines where the magnetics are the strongest. Locals in these areas often have sightings that are not reported to the government or the media. There are few indigenous people who have not seen UFOs and consider them part of their legends and ancient mythologies, highlighted in their creation myths. gods visit in flying spacecraft and create a race called humans. There is always the promise that they will return one day. Well, on today's show, I'm going to be talking about some famous sightings from our neighbors down under. Probably the most popular case from Australia is the Frederick Valentich incident. In fact, if you want to listen to an in-depth discussion between myself and my friend Micah Hanks about this event, then you should go back and check out the podcast we did about it back in April of 2017. You can find this and all back episodes on iTunes or, of course, our website. But anyways, if you're not familiar with the case, allow me to explain. In 1978, a 20-year-old pilot named Frederick Valentich really disappeared. Now, Valentich had been attempting a training flight over the Bass Strait. This lies between Australian mainland and Tasmania. He was piloting a Cessna 182L, which is a light, small aircraft, and was a moderately experienced pilot, clocking roughly 150 hours of flying time. On the evening of October 21st, Valentich departed for a training flight from Moorabbin to King Island. This was a 125-mile trek over the Bass Strait. At 7.06 p.m., Valentich radioed the Melbourne Flight Service to report an unidentified aircraft following him at 4,500 feet. The service told him that there was no air traffic near him at the time. But Valentich insisted he could see a large, unknown craft following him, and it was very close. He said it appeared to have four bright landing lights that were all illuminated. He claimed it passed 1,000 feet above him, moving at a very high rate of speed. For another 5 minutes, he reported the aircraft's movements. He claimed it moved towards him, and he thought the other pilot was toying with him and that it was orbiting above him. The only description, besides the four landing lights, that Valentich was able to give was that the aircraft's exterior was a shiny and metallic-looking material, and that it had a green light on it. Well, a few minutes after first radioing the Melbourne Flight Service, Valentich reported he was having engine trouble. The radio officials asked him once more to identify the other aircraft. That's when he said the most puzzling part of the radio discussion. He said, "It isn't an aircraft." Right before the transmission was cut off, the last sound and the radio officials heard was the sound of a metallic scraping sound. Radio officials at the Melbourne Flight Service assumed that Frederick Valentich had crashed, but an initial sea and air search of the area he was last reported in turned up nothing. To this day, no one knows what happened. Did he truly crash into the ocean, or was he and his aircraft captured by something from another world? We'll never know. Another interesting case was the 1966 Westhall sighting. Now, the Westhall UFO encounter took place on April 6, 1966, in Melbourne, Australia. This happened around 11 a.m., and it lasted for around 20 minutes. More than 200 students and teachers and two Victorian state schools allegedly witnessed an unexplained flying object which descended into a nearby opened wild grass field. The paddock was adjacent to a grove of pine trees in an area known as the Grange, which is now a nature reserve. According to the reports, the object then ascended in a northwesterly direction over the suburb of Clayton South. At approximately 11 a.m., a class of students and a teacher from Westhall High School, now Westhall Secondary College, were just completing sports on the main oval when an object, described as a gray saucer-shaped craft with a slight purple hue and being about twice the size of a family car, was allegedly to have been seen. Now, witness descriptions were mixed. A man named Andrew Greenwood, a science teacher, told the Dandenong Journal at the time that he saw a silvery green disc. According to the witnesses, the object was descending and then crossed and overflew the high school's southwest corner, going in a southeasterly direction, before finally disappearing from sight as it descended behind a stand of trees and into a paddock at The Grange, which is in the front of the West Hall State School. After a short period, approximately 20 minutes or so, the object, with witnesses now numbering over 200, then climbed at a speed and departed towards the northwest. As the object gained altitude, some accounts describe it as having been pursued from the scene by five unidentified aircraft which circled the object as it moved. The alleged sighting was investigated by two groups, the Victorian Flying Saucer Research Society, or the VFSRS, and the Phenomena Research Australia Group, or PRA. Now, both groups described it as being one of Australia's major unexplained UFO cases. The VFSRS team arrived on site on April 8th and spoke to some of the students, and they viewed what they called a ground mark. The VFSRS printed an image and a small report in their magazine, known as the Australian UFO Bulletin, in December 2000. An investigator named Brian Boyle, who was from the PRA, arrived at the site on April 9th with four Army investigators. Now, Boyle did a number of interviews, which he recorded on tape over a number of days and took samples from this ground mark that both groups had found. These investigators were able to speak to many of the witnesses as it was over the Easter holidays between April 8th and 11th. Though some witnesses reported five Cessna-type aircraft around the object, investigators were unable to find any record of such aircraft. Moorabbin Airport, which is 4.76 kilometers southwest from the location, was checked, but no aircraft from that airport entered the airspace. The RAAF also reported no military activity in that area on that particular day. If this wasn't strange enough, apparently some men in black showed up and harassed some of the teachers and faculty. Several teachers at the school reported that two men in dark blue suits had come and talked to them about what they saw. They were also told not to discuss what they saw that day, especially to the press. One of the teachers, who had grabbed her camera and snapped dozens of pictures of the saucer-shaped object, said that when she was taken aside by the men in suits, they took her camera and said it was now their property. Another science teacher at the school, a man named Andrew Greenwood, was later visited by officers at his home who threatened him to not discuss any of what he had witnessed under the Official Secrets Act. If he did, they told him that they would have him fired and discredit him by releasing rumors of him being an alcoholic, which he wasn't. To this day, there has not been a good explanation for what took place on April 6th, 1966. So how do you explain that? More than 200 people saw it in broad daylight. I don't know. Moving on, another interesting case is known as the Kelly Cahill abduction. In August 1993, 27-year-old Kelly Cahill, her husband, and three children were driving home after a visit to a friend's house. Their routine journey would soon become a horrifying trip into the unknown, where they would encounter otherworldly beings. The Dandenong foothills near Belgrave, Victoria, would have its location forever linked to the sighting of one of the most unusual humanoid creatures in ufology. After midnight, the Cahills were on their journey home when they first noticed the lights of a rounded craft with windows around it. It silently hovered above the road. Different colored lights were clearly visible on the bottom of the object. The UFO was so close to the ground that Kelly thought she could see people through the window openings. As she began screaming to her husband what she was seeing, the craft zoomed off to their left, disappearing as quickly as it had made itself known. Now, continuing their drive home with a renewed interest in the sky, they suddenly came upon a light so bright that they were practically blinded. Shading her eyes from the intense light with her hands over her eyes, Kelly begged of her husband, "What are you going to do?" Her husband, now frightened to death by the glowing presence before him, replied, "I'm just going to keep on driving." Within what seemed like only a second or two, Kelly was now very relaxed, suddenly calmed by the disappearance of the intense, glowing light that had turned night into day for a brief few moments. The first words out of Kelly's mouth were, "What happened? Did I black out?" Her husband said nothing, as he had no answer to give his wife. He cautiously drove his family home. Upon their safe arrival, Kelly could smell a foul odor, like vomit, and she suddenly felt as though something was missing from their drive home. Something was missing. An hour or so of time had vanished from her and her family's life. That night, as Kelly undressed for bed, she noticed a strange triangular mark on her navel, a mark she had never seen before. Did she get it somehow on the drive home earlier that evening? But how? And why? And most importantly, by whom? Kelly suffered from some unknown illness for the next few weeks and was taken to the hospital on two occasions, one for severe stomach pain and another for a urinary infection. Kelly would soon begin to remember details of that fearful night over time, and without any outside aid, such as regressive hypnosis or counseling. She recalled the object they had seen in a slightly different place than she first remembered. She said it was hovering in a gully, and this UFO was big. She estimated that it was about 150 feet in diameter. She could also recall that when the object was first spotted, her husband had stopped the car, and both her and her husband had gotten out of the vehicle and walked in the direction of the massive craft without any fear. It was as if they were being subconsciously drawn to the strange-looking craft. To their surprise, they noticed another car stopped on the side of the road. As they walked down towards the craft, they saw a creature unlike either of them had ever seen before. It was black. Not a black color, but black as if all matter was removed where its presence was. Kelly would later describe it as not having a soul. Kelly's words for the alien were void of color, yet its shape was clearly discernible. The black alien entity was taller than the average man, about 7 feet tall, according to Kelly, and its eyes were large like a fly's, and they were glowing red. After being mesmerized by the sight of the being, she saw more of them. Heaps of them, is how Kelly described them as she started into the open field. The aliens were out there in the field, beneath the immense flying craft. The beings seemed to congregate in small groups, and one group glided towards Kelly and her husband, covering 100 yards in a mere few seconds. Another group was approaching the other car, which sat motionless near the hovering craft. Kelly had a sense that the creatures were evil. She clung to her husband, fighting the feeling of blacking out. Her great fear and dread would cause her to scream at the alien-looking entities to leave them alone. That's when she remembers going unconscious, and then she was back in their car. As strange as this encounter seems, it was not without corroboration. The occupants in the other car would later come forward and tell almost an exact same story. A story of abduction, mind control, and embarrassing procedures. Kelly recalled through dreams the black alien stooping over her helpless, nude body like he was kissing her navel. The account of Kelly Cahill has been examined and re-examined by many researchers. Many theories have been put forward, but nothing new has been uncovered. Nothing has been proven or disproved. Kelly Cahill was considered a reliable, honest person by those who knew her at the time of this strange sighting. Her case is considered legitimate by many UFO investigators. Which brings me to the Knowles family encounter. This one I find really unusual. It's one of my favorites, and I think you're going to like it. On January 20th, 1988, Faye Knowles, her adult sons Patrick, who was 24, her son Sean, who was 21, and Wayne, who was 18, and their two dogs were making their way towards Melbourne, Australia, across a vast expanse of limestone bedrock called the Nullarbor Plain. Now this area, man, it's very remote. Imagine a desert landscape with no one around for miles and miles. No businesses, no ranches, nothing. In fact, people driving this route are expected to carry extra fuel, extra water, and food just in case something were to happen. If your vehicle broke down in any way, it might be some time before you would find any help. So, it's a very remote place. Perhaps that is why they had their experience in that location. Now, while Sean was driving in the early morning, it was still dark outside, a strange light was spotted some distance ahead near the town of Mundrabilla. Now, because this area is so remote, they were surprised to see another motorist out there in the desert. As they watched the strange light, they began to notice it seemed to be getting brighter and brighter. It seemed to be growing in size and changing color from time to time. The odd-looking light was getting closer now, and they could see that it was semi-spherical or egg-shaped and was most certainly not another vehicle, as it was just a single bright light and seemed to be hovering in the air over the desert landscape. As the family struggled to comprehend what they were seeing, the strange object allegedly emitted a beam of light that swept towards their vehicle and caused the driver, Sean, to take evasive maneuvers. The beam missed the car, but this is when Sean would claim the object had begun to follow them down that lonely roadway, easily keeping pace with them no matter how fast they went. They apparently passed another car going the other direction, after which the mysterious object stopped pursuing them and began to follow the other car. Now, Sean reportedly turned the car around to follow the other car and its UFO pursuer to figure out what was going on, but thought better of it, turned around yet again. The object then must have decided to go after them again because it was soon closing in on them once more. It purportedly got brighter and closer, passing them a few times to circle around to approach them again before positioning itself right above their car as the terrified family within screamed out of fright. There was then a thump on the roof, and the car slowed down as if something very heavy were sitting on top of it, leading them to the horrible realization that it had actually lowered itself to make contact with the vehicle. Now, according to the witnesses, it then issued a shrill, an ear-piercing sound, and Faye would say that they were overcome with the sense of something invading their minds, later saying, "It felt like something was going into our heads." And her son Patrick would say, "I felt like my brain was being sucked out." They also claimed that their voices became distorted and that they moved sluggishly, as if underwater or experiencing a slowing of time itself. Things would intensify when they felt the car physically lift off of the road, after which they were shaken violently from side to side as a gray mist filled the canopy of the car, and they dropped back down with such force that it blew one of their tires and disabled the vehicle to leave them stranded in the middle of nowhere. Faye Knowles would later say in an interview, "I wound down the window, and I felt this thing on the roof. All of this smoke stuff started coming into the car. The car was covered in black stuff. It was a small light, and all of a sudden, it became big like this, big like a big ball. We thought we were dying. Then we got out of the car. We hid behind a little tree and the bushes, and it couldn't find us." After a few minutes of just listening to their own heartbeats and checking their undergarments, they decided to look at their now disabled vehicle. They quickly went into the trunk and retrieved a spare tire and jack and changed the completely damaged tire and drove back to Mundrabilla. They stopped at a gas station and told the clerk and others what had happened to them. Apparently, they were not alone. A trucker at the gas station there would tell them that he had also seen the strange, eerie light out over the desert as well. When their car was later examined, it was found to be pretty banged up, and both the exterior and interior were covered with a fine film of black material, like soot or ash, and had an unusual odor, like sulfur. The Knowles were able to get some truckers to go with them out to where the incident had supposedly occurred, where they allegedly found odd skid marks on the road that seemed to show that The vehicle had, in fact, been dragged sideways by some powerful force, thus backing up the family's claims. Upon returning to town, they notified the police. They came and listened to the family's stories, collected some samples of the strange black soot or dust to be later tested. The test came back with no real results, inconclusive, and the local police acted like they didn't really want anything to do with this case. The Knowles family believes that someone got to the police and instructed them to look the other way and not to pursue the case any further. They believe that there was some sort of government cover-up. Now many people have come forward over the years trying to discredit the Knowles family and their strange encounter with a UFO. One researcher by the name of William Buckley claims that it was no UFO that attacked the Knowles family that night, but an attack by a secret government organization using a helicopter and a giant electromagnet hanging from it. He told the reporters, "The attack on the Knowles family was orchestrated and carried out by a well-resourced paramilitary organization operating in Australia, using a sophisticated helicopter with specialized lifting equipment. The Knowles' involvement was purely accidental. They were not the intended target and were attacked only because they resembled the real target group, who were also traveling on the same road that night. The nature of this covert action by this paramilitary group and the importance of the assassination attempt on the real target group are now shrouded in secrecy and covered up, and nobody wants the truth to be revealed. This is obviously a case of attempted murder of four people who were all extremely traumatized by this hour-long attack. There's plenty of forensic evidence and witnesses to prove that the family was attacked, and a major police investigation should have been triggered to uncover the truth. But that is only that guy's theory. Others claim that it was the Min Min Lights. Now, in the remote emptiness of the Australian outback, there is an occasional sighting of a magical phenomenon known as the Min Min Lights. They are reported by witnesses as glowing spheres in the night sky that seem to have the ability to move around, follow people, disappear, and then reappear. Descriptions and reports of what they look like vary, but they mainly have been described as fuzzy balls of light that seem to hover just over the horizon. Their color is usually reported as being white, although there have been sightings where they change color from white to red, to green, to back to white again. Some observers have seen Min Min lights that were so bright that the ground around them was lit up, and the objects in the immediate vicinity cast a shadow. But other reports say that the spheres of light are very dim.
It was early morning on the sparse wasteland of the Nullarbor Plain when Faye Knowles and her three sons claim they heard an ear-splitting whir as they were chased by a glowing orange object. The Perth family was driving east on the Eyre Highway near Mundrabilla, less than 100 kilometres from the South Australian border. Mrs. Knowles has told police at Ceduna the egg-shaped UFO landed on their car as they were travelling at over 100 kilometres an hour. It swung the vehicle around before dropping it with such force it blew a tyre.
What about the people? Were they harmed at all?
Weren't harmed, visibly shaken up.
When the strange object disappeared, Mrs. Knowles and her sons Patrick, Sean and Wayne found their Telstar sedan covered in black ash. Truck drivers on the Nullarbor say there have been at least three UFO sightings since Christmas. Graham Henley saw the Knowles family at a Mundrabilla roadhouse. He confirmed they appeared shaken and upset.
I really couldn't explain it in normal everyday terms, but those people were interfered with by something.
And today, support for the bizarre story from another Perth family travelling along the Nullarbor.
Massive light. It was very, very bright. I mean, it would have to have a lot of power in those lights to light up the whole area, and the sky was lit above it.
It was too bright. It was a strange phenomenon.
Experts say a possible explanation for the encounter may be a phenomenon called Min Min, an Aboriginal term meaning dancing lights.
Family driving across the lonely Nullarbor Plain is chased by strange lights. Then their car is literally lifted off the ground and dropped again by the same glowing object. All this supposedly happened early yesterday, but was it a hallucination or a close encounter with aliens? Well, several other people have reported seeing mysterious lights in the same area, among them truck driver John De Jong, who joins us now from Adelaide. John, are you convinced that there was a UFO sighting on the highway?
Yes.
100% yes.
How can you say that?
Because of the condition of the people that it happened to. When we got to them, it was hysterical, well, out of this world, put it any way you like.
I can tell you that I've just seen little green men, but you're not likely to believe me, are you?
No.
So why do you believe this particular story?
Well, there's two instances that come up fairly recent in the last few months. One is I was followed for about an hour and a bit by a big bright light, which sounds silly, but I was followed. I was on my own. There was no backup to that story. It did frighten me. I actually kept travelling and locked my cab up and kept driving. It sounds silly, but it's true.
Did you think that was a UFO at the time?
First up, I thought it was a helicopter doing low flying. But no way. It wasn't a helicopter because I checked it out to see if it was one in the area.
So that was one experience. Any more?
Yes, I had another one just before Christmas. About an hour from where this happened. I was travelling along, minding my own business, and the truck just got uncontrollable. I couldn't drive it. So I just pulled it up very smartly, got out, checked all my steering, and everything was in perfect condition. I took off and no more dramas.
So how do you explain these mysterious occurrences in that very spot?
I wish I knew. It's not scary, it's a mystery that I wouldn't mind solving. It's a problem out there, and it's a lot more happening.
Do you know of any other drivers who've had similar experiences there?
A lot of us talk about them, yeah.
What kind of experiences?
Well, the sort of things that, like I've just said, the truck just does funny things. You get electrical problems. There's no electricity out there, so what's going on? Your hair stands up on the back of your neck for no reason. You get frightened.
So there's a whole lot of you truckies who are now believers in UFOs.
Well, whether it's UFOs or what it is, I don't know. But see, the thing that, I can't explain it. You see things and you hear things, but no one wants to believe you. It's hard to come on here and explain it. It's nearly impossible.
Have you ever said to yourself, maybe I'm going a little crazy?
No.
You're absolutely sure that you've
I've got to be silly to be driving a truck, but that's beside the point.
So what kind of effect has all of this had on you? Are you more careful when you drive down that stretch of road?
Well, we'll be going back again next week.
See what happens next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, every trip's a different one, but this is one that I would like to follow through because it actually happened. And if it hadn't have been for the people, I wouldn't have worried about it.
John, thanks for joining us.
So, what really happened to the Knowles family out there, in the middle of the remote deserts of Australia? Was it a UFO? If so, what did they want? Was it a covert paramilitary group with a helicopter and electromagnet? If so, what did they want? That seems more unbelievable than extraterrestrials to me. Or was it something else? Perhaps the Min Min lights. In the end, we will never know. But certainly some Australian truck drivers believe the Knowles family. So what about you? You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
I don't believe in little green men with aerials sticking out their head. That's it in a nutshell. But I do believe they were interfered with. I've got my own ideas on it. They were definitely interfered with.
What state were they in when you saw them at the petrol station?
Absolutely terrified. Totally terrified. Their reactions were totally different to a person out of a car accident.
So I hope everybody liked that story, that crazy sighting that happened to the Knowles family there in Australia. And what I like about not just the sighting and stuff, but, you know, a lot of people talk about, they were just making this up. It wasn't a UFO, but you have a family full of people in one automobile. And frankly, much like with Bob Lazar, they didn't gain anything by making up this story.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other witnesses that confirmed the presence of an unidentified oval light in that area. A couple other truckers saw something. They said that during the investigation that the police actually discovered a fisherman that was about 80 kilometers away. And he also witnessed a similar oval-shaped UFO out at sea, and the fishermen reported the same thing as they did, is the sensation of time being slowed down. Like, they felt the same thing that the Knowles family observed. And so how could two people separated by 80 kilometers witness and feel like the same sensation? I don't know if they're making it up, but boy, what a coincidence. Also, like I mentioned, a lot of people think that's what this Min Min Lights is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the Min Min Lights are the Australian version of the same thing we have over here, whether it's the Brown Mountain Lights, whether it's the Marfa Lights. There's several places that seem to have these orbs, these floating points of light that dance around and move around. And then there's lots of theories on that, too. Like, that's a fairy that people are seeing. Other people will claim that it's some kind of spirit. You know, the aboriginals or the natives of the land talk about it's their, you know, their ancestors or whatever that they're seeing. And then other people are saying, no, it's definitely UFOs. It's not even UFOs. It's probes that were sent by UFOs. But this thing definitely chased their car, whatever this light was. They remember they talked about passing another car on the highway, and the thing left them and started following the other car. Sean, I think, was the one driving. He busted a U, went back to see what was going to happen, and the thing actually left that car and started following them again. I don't know what to make of all this, but something definitely not only frightened them, but picked their car up off the road. And when it slammed back down, I mean, there was if they were making up the story, the damage on the car matched the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, several of the people in and around that area have witnessed strange things at night, floating around, flying around. So maybe it's just a hot spot. Maybe there's some reason that UFOs pick that spot. Maybe because of how remote it is out there. Like, this is a good place where we can abduct people and maybe not be seen because it's so vast out there. You know, like the interior of that part of Australia is, I mean, there's nothing out there.
Yeah.
They talk about, like, if you're going to make that drive, they even talk about, you better bring some extra food, extra water, and
that's
extra
fuel.
That's
where all the overlanding stuff starts.
Yeah, because if something happens,
they're utes. They build their utes and drive them down there.
Right? You know, like if your water pump goes out and you ain't got no food, it might be a while before any help gets out there.
Yeah, that's a bad deal.
So I hope everybody liked that. Cam, what else? What have you been up to?
Well, I've got some cool stuff here that I want to share with all y'all real quick. We just right here while I'm got this pulled up, we just got another message.
Oh no, here we go.
And this first one I got to share with y'all because y'all remember a while back I talked about being at Flames, that seafood restaurant or whatnot there with my daughter. My daughter saw something in the sky.
Remember? I remember that.
And I talked about it. And I said I wasn't sure what it was, right? Well, we had a woman, I don't know whether the username or not, but I'm going to say Jenny, that contacted us. And this past week, while her son was going to work, he says that he saw a huge black wing creature flying in the sky about 7 o'clock one morning.
Really?
And as he approached an overpass, he said the creature flew over it. And then when he got past the bridge, he said it completely disappeared. And he's looking up, looking everywhere, and he cannot find it. Said it's nothing, have no idea. Well, he said that its body and wingspan, the whole thing, was about 10 foot across. So this isn't something, you know, like we talk about. You're not just going to be like, oh, it was a bird. Like, no, this thing is something not normal, big black winged creature that we're not sure what it is. Well, Jenny lives here in Weatherford, and I don't know, like I said, how she got a hold of me and all this stuff. So she also had talked about her and her mother go for a walk every evening, and on the same day that evening, after her son had seen it that morning, that evening they saw something with red eyes out in the field by where her and her mother walk. And she said that she would tease her mother about it and said, oh, look, it's a vampire. But she says, now I can't help but think that these two have something, you know, in common,
mm-hmm.
like they may be linked together.
Right.
So this just came in, and I'm going to have to read this to you. Travis just sent this in, and I'm legitimately holding all this up here, and boom, it goes off. And he writes that, I just wanted to let you know that I too have seen what you saw over Flames. I saw it a few years ago when I lived off Bethel in Weatherford. Says, I was riding one of my Harleys one night and had an uneasy feeling and kept checking my mirrors looking behind me. And it wasn't until I was almost in town that I looked up for some reason and saw something like you described flying above me. All I could think of, and he says, I'm not proud of it, was the Jeepers Creepers.
Oh, man.
He says, I've kept that to myself till today when I randomly came across y'all's podcast. And also says years ago, like 06, 07, starts talking about seeing some stuff around it. And it says they went to a soldier's watering hole, like, you know, basically out there, like old campsites, and had some creepy stuff happen out there too. But it's just wild that Travis has just now found us and found the podcast and has seen exactly what I've talked about a few years ago.
Well, I like the fact that I like the sighting. It's interesting to me. What I don't like is that it's in my town, because I don't really want Jeepers Creepers creeping around me. That's
100% what I'm thinking is, I was like, what is going on? And why now? Like, why that I saw it, and then now this guy's come forward to see it, and then Jenny says her kid just saw it. Like, I'll tell you straight up, folks, where we live, there are no big, giant, abandoned buildings for anything to hide out in. The biggest thing, if it's empty in this county, it has hay stacked in it.
Yeah.
That's how this works. See, that's it. Like, there's no, yeah, no, no. If it's empty around here, somebody's already bought it up or leased it up, and it's holding hay.
Man, right? Man, we're going to have to get with them, maybe go out and look and see where they saw this. Maybe take some filming equipment, interview. That'd be something we definitely need to look into.
Yeah, for sure.
Very, very cool. Well, if you have any sightings of your own you would like to share with me and Cam, please email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. It's a supplemental podcast to this one. If you like this show, you'll like Elite. We do extra episodes every month, and you have access to the entire back catalog if you want to hear that. It's all, you can get it all for $5. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, scroll down to the Elite tab, sign up. It's pretty easy, and you'll get all of that extra content. Don't forget about our sponsor, Native Deodorant. For 20% off your first purchase, just go to nativedeodorant.com and be sure to use the promo code EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, during checkout. Cam?
Holla at your boy.
With this lockdown, you got anything exciting that you're going to be doing from your house? Do you have any new shows you'd like to promote, or any new series, or the listeners, something they can check out and watch?
Let's see. Something that I may have checked out.
I know you're constantly telling me about new stuff. I've got a list going because there's so many things you've told me, and I have to get through them, and it's hard. You know, and I know a lot of people listening to this are like, man, first world problems. It's hard watching series on Netflix.
Right.
But, you know, like with the kids running around, some of them aren't appropriate. They're adult only. And by the time they finally go to, and it's really, with this lockdown, they're not going to bed early, right?
Yeah, so like, yeah, yeah.
They're not going to bed till like 1 a.m.
They ain't about that long.
Yeah, so it's hard to squeeze it in. But, yeah, I love to binge watch things on whatever platform. In fact, I know that the new Ozark is coming out, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah, yep, it's going to drop tomorrow.
So I'm sure I'll be watching that this weekend.
I think most of them I've told you about. And then, like, you've been after me to watch this Tiger King. And so I finally watched it. And then everybody at my work was like, yeah, you've got to check it out. And it's 100% worth watching.
Yeah, I liked The Outsider on HBO was very good. What was something else I watched? The McMillions, I think it was a documentary on HBO about the people that were ripping off the McDonald's Monopoly game. That was pretty interesting. And there was one other show, I can't remember right now off the top of my head. It was something scary because I know Luke was jumping up and down about it. But yeah, and it's, what I think is awesome is that they're on iTunes and stuff. They're making available movies that are in the movie theater that you can purchase.
Yes, I saw that with Invisible Man was out.
Yeah,
I was almost going to watch that when I didn't do it.
I think I might get one of those for Luke this weekend. I know he's really, you know, he's kind of bored not being able to do anything. But yeah. Everybody out there, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Be sure to wash your hands. You know, don't be going around in town unless it's really absolutely necessary. You know, you're not just going out to hang out. Keep, what's the distance? 6 feet.
6 feet.
And at least don't get in groups larger than 10. And be safe out there. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.